going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Friday, TGIF. Happy day one in the books of the NFL draft day for us to react to and have some fun with today. Happy Royals sweep, doubleheader sweep day. We've got all kinds of fun stuff to get to. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here, Max Power producing for you. We've got the KFH hotline open. React, anything in the first round that did or did not happen. Chiefs fans, I think most are happy today. 869-1240 is the hotline. You can call it the good old-fashioned way. You can simply leave us your comments on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X. Or thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. You can also leave us voice messages on the Odyssey app. We appreciate it however it comes to us, and we're glad to be here with you today. Tommy, that was a fun draft night. That was maybe a little less active with the big blockbuster trades than people thought, But I thought there was a lot of intrigue. I had fun with that last night.
Yeah, it started off with a bang early on with the Browns trading number two to the Jags at number five. And then it really kind of just felt chalky for a while until we finally got some more action happening towards the end of the first round. And then it ended with the Chiefs making a trade, trading back to the final pick of the first round and getting their offensive tackle that they had been talking about and looking at for a long time. So it was a lot of fun to watch. I thought there were some pretty clear winners and some pretty clear losers in that first round, both from a team perspective and a player perspective. But all in all, it was extremely entertaining.
Yeah, it was good. Of course, the non-drafting of one particular player makes it even more, you know, dramatic, I guess, with Shedeur Sanders. But and we'll get to all of that. We'll get to all of these picks, the trade, the Chiefs, what they did, our favorite picks of the round and some of those things. But it was good. I love the spectacle. It was fun. My kids, you know, watched the first four or five picks until bedtime and they were into it. Like they didn't even know what was happening and they were into it. And they were like, so wait, you know, like one of these guys is Patrick Mahomes. He can't get drafted. Can he? I'm like, no, he's safe. And then they're like learning about what's happening and they really thought it was cool and they liked it. And of course then they're like, well, when do the Chiefs get to pick? And I'm like, not till way after your bedtime, not till way after my bedtime.
Yeah.
But It was a pretty cool.
By the way, I was all excited when pick 31 came up because I'm like, okay, like they're going to pick and then I can go to bed. Then they traded back a pick and I'm like, yeah. I got to wait like another 10 minutes.
They're just toying.
It was worth it.
The Eagles and the Chiefs kind of toyed with everybody on draft day a little bit. I think that was pretty interesting. And you saw it and you're like, and then you see everything that happens. You're like, okay, well, that I guess makes sense on both sides. And look, the Chiefs did exactly what they wanted to do. Like that was, you couldn't have drawn it up any better for Kansas City, honestly. Like it just kind of went the way they needed it to. And we'll get into all the reasons maybe for that, but they land their left tackle, they think of the future. And that's what you wanted to come out. I mean, that's what I wanted. However it happened, I thought they'd have to trade up to do it. They didn't have to trade up to do it. But whatever you wanted to happen, that was the thing you wanted them to end up with, at least the majority of people, because it's been such a problem for them for so long. So they end up with their player, their guy. I imagine, you know, was he like their number one guy, Josh Simmons? We'll never know that. And we can get into whether we think that's the case or not. But it's a player that a lot of people like that fits them probably better than any team in football because they can wait for him and all of those things. But we'll get that. We'll also get the Royals. Look, the Royals with a big sweep yesterday too. Jalen Thompson's going to be in to help us with the Royals and look ahead. And we'll have Felix Johnson in to analyze the draft with us. That's all coming up in the next hour. So stay tuned for all of that. But Tommy, the Royals get a sweep, maybe even more critical. Jack Caglione plays right field last night and made a couple plays. Like, he looked fine out there. It's coming. It never made any sense whatsoever to me that they wouldn't do it. Well, they did it last night, and here we go. I think that's the fast track for him.
Well, I think that, you know, while that's a great story, and we'll certainly keep our eyes on it for sure as he continues developing in the minors, I think more impactful what we saw yesterday from the Royals is not only did they sweep the Rockies, but the bats came alive at a larger scale than what we've seen in a long time from Kansas City. They finally broke the streak, scoring more than four runs in a game, and they did it in both games of the doubleheader against the Rockies. It was a little testy early on in the first game. Cole Reagans exits with an injury after, you know, a couple of innings pitching. He didn't look great at all. I'm like, oh no, like Reagans has given up a bunch of runs, and we'll have to kind of hold our breath and wait and see injury-wise what's happening with him. But the Royals' bats were able to bail him out a little bit in game one, and then they looked really solid in game two as well. Salvador Perez had a really good game in game two for the Royals offensively. That's what we've wanted to see from them. I think that's super impactful for them going into this next series this weekend at home against the Astros. They needed the bats to come alive, and there's a ways to go. It's a very small sample size against the worst team in baseball, but it was good to see that. That's what we needed to see. Now they need to carry that on.
I'm sorry, did you say testy?
Got a little testy.
Are we allowed a little testy? Are we allowed to say that,
a little testy.
Are we allowed to say that, Max? Do we need to hit the drop button there? Just want to make sure. It's early in the morning.
What's in your mind? What are you thinking about?
You can't miss an opportunity for a sixth grade appropriate joke. I'm sorry. I don't care how old you are.
That doesn't even warrant a drum beat like that.
That's not a joke. It's not a drum beat. It's just pointing out the fact that you said testy. And I thought that was funny.
It got a little testy. It got a little testy yesterday with the with Cole Reagans and the pitching.
It did. Cole Reagans, I need to know more about his injury, by the way. I haven't seen an update on that. We'll ask Jalen Thompson because he had to leave the game. Salvi woke up. I mean, that could be all the difference in the world for this team. How much offense of yesterday's offense was provided just by Salvi being Salvi? Honestly, I think because we're going to talk so much draft. I think that's the thing with the Royals this year. Like, they're that close to being fine. It took Salvi just doing normal Salvi things in the right opportunities. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay. Like they're okay. Like they're fine. Vinny's still not hitting, but you just needed somebody else in those spots to come up with a couple of big hits. And it totally changes the outlook of everything. So hopefully, and Salvi's streaky anyway, especially as he gets older, he can carry the offense for a little while. Who's the next guy that's going to do it? Maybe when he cools back off, if that was a one day aberration or whatever, probably not. He's probably going to stay hot for a little while here, but there's that. So yeah, look, Caglione, get him up, get him, you know, give him a few more weeks probably. And if nobody's going to step up, get him up. Drew Waters is stepping up. Drew Waters needs to be playing every day. That's for sure.
Yeah, he looks like your everyday left fielder, in my opinion. I mean, I think he looks like...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Mikel Garcia. And, you know, Kyle Isbell deserves a spot on the team, but Mikel Garcia can be your everyday center fielder. If they can get Jonathan India back rolling again, I mean, Massey, to me, is sort of the odd man out, so he better step it up, or he's going to become kind of a rotational guy too. But they've got some options, and this will be good. Now, if Hunter Renfroe doesn't pick it up, that's Jack Caglione's spot. I mean, it is. That's his spot. So we'll see what happens. They've got a long time. They don't have to rush it, but it's good to see him down there. We'll have Jalen Thompson in to talk all of those Royals things. Let's talk about the draft. We'll start with the Chiefs and what they did. We got a lot to say on this topic today. Felix Johnson in next hour to join us. It's Albrecht and Caster at Sports Daily. Draft Reaction Day is one of my favorite. Let's go.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere. Applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Fridays mean another Friday fit here on Sports Daily. Tommy, what do you have for us?
Yeah, so our friends over at 3570 Golf Company, we are getting into golfing weather. It's that time of year, and they provide great golf apparel. They are a locally owned golf apparel company right here in Wichita. All their clothing designs embody the heartland, the Midwest, this part of the country, and you can take a look at everything that they offer, whether that's golf shirts or hoodies. They've got hats. They've got head covers. Today, I am wearing the Amber Waves polo, and I love it. It definitely embodies this part of the country for sure, and so you can check out their entire selection on their website. They're dropping new, different designs and different kinds of apparel all the time on their website, 35x70golfco.com. All you have to do is use the promo code Tommy, T-O-M-M-Y, and get 10% off your first order.
All right, there you go. I appreciate their support of the program. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here with you. All right, let's talk about the NFL draft. Let's start with the Chiefs, Tommy. Josh Simmons is the pick. They don't trade up. They trade back one spot to get him. Your thought on them being able to sit and take their tackle? Came true. Simmons fell. It was a risk. What I think is really interesting is in my opinion, that's exactly that is a best case scenario. They were able to stand pat even at a fifth round pick on the way to getting the tackle. To me, that makes a lot of sense for them. Now, you know, I don't know how much they loved any of the other tackles in this draft. They were never going to get Will Campbell, but I don't know how much they loved Mimbu. I don't know how much they loved Kelvin Banks. You know, the real scary spot was a little before them when Washington took Connerly, because they were, and I wondered about Buffalo. Washington just added Tunsil, but you know, with a young quarterback, you can't protect him enough. And it played out that way. The interesting thing to think about, Tommy, is they couldn't have known going in that he would fall. So what was the plan would be interesting to know. It's an answer we'll never get, but was the plan to just stand pat and take somebody? I don't know, but it worked out either way that the Chiefs got a player. I think that all of us, like, they've got to get better at tackle. This is a guy who profiles finally, right? Going before we ever see them play, he at least profiles for the first time to do that since the Chiefs took Eric Fisher number one overall.
Yeah, it's definitely a move that I expected them to do. You know, I thought they would stand pat. Of course, they traded back one pick, but I didn't think they would trade up. I was very clear on that. I thought that they would stay where they were, and I thought that they would take Josh Simmons. I thought that they would get their tackle of the future, and that's ultimately what they ended up doing. Even though that's what I thought they would do, it doesn't mean that I love the pick. I like the pick. Don't get me wrong. I like it. I don't know if I love it. And I think it's primarily just because of the injury risk and what that means long term. You know, a patella tendon injury is pretty brutal. And, you know, he played like four games in 2024, five games, I think, somewhere around there, and then was done for the entire rest of the season for Ohio State. And, you know, Andy Reid said last night after they drafted him that he would definitely be ready for training camp. And that was his words, definitely, that he'd be ready for training camp. But we don't know that for sure. We won't know that until we get there. And, you know, that's something that occasionally can be lingering. It's something that, you know, can follow a player for a while. And that's the number one reason why he fell all the way to where he did. So it is a little bit of a risk for somebody like Simmons who's coming off of that kind of injury. But the fit and the position and the way that he projects out, assuming he's healthy long term, I totally understand it. And if the injury ends up being a non-factor whatsoever, then, you know, I'll definitely go from I like the pick to I love the pick.
Yeah, you know, Trey Smith, I think, had an even more concerning college injury or college medical situation.
I mean, he fell all the way to what, five? Like fifth round, sixth round, wherever he went?
The Chiefs are comfortable with the injury. I mean, I am too, because I think the upside is high enough. Again, everyone, I think with you've got to sometimes we overthink what has to happen in a draft for a good team, especially. You know, if you're rebuilding your franchise, like the Jaguars better hope they got that right. The Titans better hope they got that right. There are certainly picks and things like that, but not every team has that circumstance around them. The Chiefs have missed on a lot of draft picks over the years. They really have. But they've gotten a lot right later on. They can afford to be risk takers because they have Mahomes. Mahomes is like, he elevates your floor always. Great quarterbacks in the league do that, right? They elevate. The Chiefs have missed on a ton of picks early. Like Felix Anudike, Clyde Edwards-Helaire both jump to mind. Like those are recent first round picks that were absolute non-factors for this team. I mean, plain and simple. And they won Super Bowls anyway, right? So I think you can bake in that risk to how you evaluate a Chiefs pick. This guy, by all accounts, would, with a clean bill of health, been the top or one of the top two tackles taken in this
round. Would have been a top 10 pick. He would have been a top 10 pick.
Chiefs got him at 32. So when you consider what the Chiefs have to lose, which is almost nothing, right? Like, it doesn't matter. They could not have a first round. It doesn't matter. In reality, it doesn't matter. They're going to make the playoffs next year. They're going to be really good next year. They'll be a Super Bowl contender next year. No matter who they took there, doesn't matter. They were able to get a guy, though, that solves a problem they've been trying to solve for 5 or 6 years, and a problem that's cost them two of the Super Bowls that they've played in, which has been pass protection. They have not had a good offensive line since Mahomes' first year as a starter, probably. I mean, maybe second year as a starter.
They were, I think, an average offensive line that first year they brought Orlando Brown in. The year after they lost the Super Bowl to Tampa Bay. Yeah. Like, that was, they were fine then. They weren't fantastic, but they were fine that year once they brought Orlando Brown Jr. in.
And so they've been trying to solve this for a really long time. And this fell in their laps. And yeah, he has an injury. Like, I am not worried. Guys, and this happens all the time in college too. Like, guys get hurt in college, and these NFL teams freak out. Guys get hurt in the NFL every single year, and they come back from their injuries, right? Like, there aren't players in football that don't get hurt, especially linemen. Like, they all get hurt.
The only thing, and I get what you're saying. The only thing is that, you know, a patella tendon injury, that can linger. Like, that can't, you know, you can come back from that, but like, that can be something that can follow you around for a while. I'm not suggesting that's what it's going to be for Josh Simmons, but that there is, I would imagine that that's probably why other teams were hesitant on him, not because he got injured, but because of the kind of injury it was, you know, where that's something that, you know, couldn't hang around for a minute, you know, with the guy. But what I like about it, and this is where I think the Chiefs have been extremely intelligent in the way that they have tried to rebuild this offensive line. Remember a season ago, we went into training camp with Wanye Morris and Kingsley Suamataia competing for the starting left tackle job. And everybody was like, and myself included, like, really? Like, are you going to do something else? Like, you've got Wanye Morris, who hasn't proven anything in his short time in the NFL, and a rookie who, again, is unproven, and not like, you know, Suamataia did not project out the way that Josh Simmons projected out. And you've got these two guys, and they're competing, and it felt like, for week one of the regular season, that the Chiefs, like, were forced, you know, into putting Suamataia in that position because they didn't have any better option. they're going to go into training camp this year, assuming that Josh Simmons is healthy and ready to go, with Jalen Moore and Josh Simmons at left tackle. And yes, there's a downgrade at left guard with Joe Tooney gone. Left guard is less impactful on a play-by-play basis than left tackle is. You've got to feel overall better. What the Chiefs want to do. Overall, you've got to feel better about where they stand with left tackle going into the season, and knowing that even if Josh Simmons isn't ready to go by training camp or isn't, you know, able to step into that starting role right away, that you've got Jalen Moore as a stopgap there. And I think the Chiefs feel a lot more comfortable riding with him than any of the options that they had last season.
Well, I've told you a million times, and Juwan Taylor's not very good.
Right.
So, like, I don't care how much they're paying him. They don't either. There's going to be a battle, three guys for two spots. Andy Reid said as much last night. Like, the best five are going to play. So, if Simmons is indeed healthy, if Moore is indeed capable of being a full-time starter, which he's never been, then Juwan Taylor is going to become your swing guy. And that's great news. Honestly, it's a best case scenario. It really is. Like, Juwan Taylor's not that good. So he's just been expensive. So he's been playing, but he's not great. So it just, like, there's no pressure on Simmons right now out of the gates. And there's now, like, you can slam the door shut on any thought that Sua Mataia has to go out there and try that again. Maybe he's a good left guard. Maybe he's not. Maybe Wanya Morris is. Maybe he's not. But I think, you know, when we're looking at the offensive line, which was the greatest weakness of the team last year, a team full of injuries, by the way, just even with all those injuries at all the different places on the field, all year long, the offensive line was the greatest flaw of this team. I know Joe Tooney's out, but there's at least, Tommy, a 50-50 chance that the line is better than it was a year ago. And I would say it's probably more like a 60-40, 65-35. I think there's a like a better than decent chance this is a better line than they had a year ago, even with losing a Pro Bowl caliber left guard in Joe Tooney, because it just, like, the way they'll be able to move it around, there's a good chance of it working. And so that's why the Chiefs, like, when you look at teams and what they needed, and like, you have to evaluate the Chiefs in a positive way. Even if you don't think they needed to go tackle there, how do you not like the strategy of it? Unless you think Josh Simmons just is a bum, I guess, then if you've got that strong take on a college.
Yeah, but if you watch his tape and you think he's a bum, you're watching the wrong tape. Because he's not.
Like, again, like, I don't evaluate college offensive linemen. They all look good in the highlight reels that they show on ESPN. Every player drafted looks
okay, so
good,
let's not even look at the highlight reel for a second. Let's take a look at, you know, something that I think single-handedly can transform the Chiefs offensively and what Patrick Mahomes wants to do and what Andy Reid wants to do with the passing game. In 2024, and I know Simmons had a shortened season because of his injury, but in 2024, you know the percentage of the pressures that Josh Simmons allowed?
On pass plays? On pass plays. Probably about like 3.
Less than 1%.
Yeah.
He allowed one pressure in 152 snaps. That's right. 0.7% of the time. Now, again, it was a shortened season, but the year before, the full season in 2023, 3.5% of the time in 2023. And so he doesn't allow defenders to get to the quarterback. And we've been saying forever, and especially last season with all of the issues that the Chiefs had on the offensive line and at left tackle specifically, that he needs more time. He needs more time to be able to let things develop. And that's why we saw the offense in the passing game have to rely on really short and intermediate passes, dump offs, things like that to the wide receivers, because there simply wasn't enough time for plays to develop downfield. And so I would think that knowing what Josh Simmons, assuming he's healthy, what he can do on the left side of the line in preventing defenders from getting into the backfield, that should allow passing plays to develop much better, and they should be able to get their deeper passing game back into effect, and they haven't had that for a while.
They've been building a roster to have a deep threat in the passing game. They have. They just, like, it's not much more than a prayer like go routes where Mahomes, but like no downfield truly dynamic route running because they don't have the time to do it. Yeah, that's your best case scenario. I love it because it's no more trying to outsmart the position. Like no more finding a right tackle, moving him over, no more pulling a guard out there. No, none of that. This is a true blue chip. He played left tackle. Dude's a left tackle. He can be a left tackle. You don't have to worry or wonder or do anything else. He played left tackle in some of the most competitive games you can possibly play in college football. Put it like you can be done. You can bring him along slowly with his injury, but we can be done trying to outsmart the position.
I think that's my big question, and you mentioned it, and I want to get your take on it. Let's say week one of the regular season comes around, and Jalen Moore is the starting left tackle for in week one. Is that simply because Simmons is not ready to go injury-wise? Or do you anticipate another scenario where Simmons is not a starter in week one?
No, they don't owe Simmons anything. Like they will play the best two of the three. I know they say that.
The best in that moment or the best that it will be?
In that moment. No, in that moment. I mean, assuming he's healthy. If he's healthy. If he's not healthy, then obviously he's not going to do that. But they seem to think that he's looking good. They like his medicals.
So then would there be a concern then?
A lot more than everybody else likes his medicals.
Would there be a concern then if he's fully healthy and Jalen Moore in week one is the better left tackle? Like, is there a concern with Simmons at that point? Like, if he is projected out, you know, to no. Blue chip, like all of this stuff, like, assuming he's healthy, shouldn't he be then the starting left tackle? I mean, he would probably grade out better than Jalen Moore.
Yeah, he's a rookie. Jalen Moore grades out well. I mean, just put one of them at right tackle. I think as long as he doesn't come out and look like Kingsley Suamataia did last year, Wanya Morris, he's a rookie. He's going to need to learn. If he's getting beat in practice by a wily veteran, then fine. I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. That's the thing. Again, I'll say it a million times today. Like, Simmons could not be a good football player, and it's not going to keep the Chiefs from making a Super Bowl this year. He could be a Pro Bowl player, and it would, you know, that would obviously have an impact on them making a Super Bowl. But no matter what they did with this pick, outside of probably trading up for an edge rusher or like trading up for a Ashton Jeanty, like nothing was really going to have a monumental impact on this team because they don't really need anything at the moment. Even if they took a receiver, that receiver is not probably that impactful until week eight, just like we saw with Worthy, just like we saw with Rashee Rice. Like, it was going to take time. So that was the beauty of how the Chiefs were able to do this, in my opinion, is there weren't a lot of scenarios where they were getting a true impact player to help them win a Super Bowl this year. They ran back the Super Bowl roster from a year ago. So what did they do? They got an immense talent, and they attacked the position that troubled them the most last year. They were able to do it by standing pat. And then, yeah, they got an extra fifth. Like, that was really cool.
That was great.
And Brett Veach, Roseman's smart there too. Like, two things can be true at the same time. Roseman is absolutely willing to sacrifice a fifth to make sure nobody else goes to that spot. I kept texting you last night. I was like, it would only have been like one or two spots, but I was like, the Chiefs should move up, make sure that nobody takes Simmons. Like, he's there now. Like, you know, you can get, like, move up now because it's going to cost you a fifth, right? Like, go up. Don't let the Rams take him. I kept looking at the Rams, and then they end trading there. I'm just like, basically, that's what the Eagles did. Like, the thing I kept texting you that the Chiefs should do as he was getting closer and closer, that's what the Eagles did with their player.
And how shrewd is Brett Veach for being able to literally move one spot, still get his guy, and add in another draft pick? And they didn't have anybody in that range. Like, they added that draft pick back, and they weren't going to pick in that range at all before that trade was made.
The Eagles weren't taking Simmons. The Eagles have the best offensive line in football, arguably one of the best. They weren't taking Simmons. Like, there are a few teams. You knew he wasn't going to go to the Lions. We didn't think he was going to go to the Commanders. Yeah. That was the scare spot. Like, I thought once he cleared the Rams.
And they went Connerly.
Tommy Shadur, we're going to just skip right to it. We're going to skip right to the elephant in the room.
I've been waiting for this.
I don't get the hate. I was going to be devastated if he ended up with the Giants, who I don't like. I was like, oh, he's going to be a Giant. He's going to rub this in everybody's face and be a Giant. I felt a little vindicated last night, I have to say, because I don't sit there and read mocks or do any of that anymore. But I felt vindicated to see how much Mel Kiper Jr. likes Shedeur Sanders.
He loves that him. Made me feel, he might be the only guy who loves Shedeur more than you do.
It made me feel, and I don't even love Shedeur. Like, I think he's going to be a pretty good quarterback. I keep saying this, like, I'm going to die on the Shedeur hill. I'm dying on a hill of a player. I'm not, like, locked into this guy's going to be the next great. Like, I don't feel that way about him at all. I just like him the best in this class. Like, that's all it is. Like, it's, again, my comp for him is Baker Mayfield. I think if he's Baker Mayfield, that's been a really great development for him. And I like Baker Mayfield. Don't get me wrong. Former number one pick and all that. But I don't think he's going to be the next, you know, I don't know, Drew Brees, like some are saying. I'm like, well, you know, maybe we hold up on that.
That's the Mel Kiper comp. I've heard Mel Kiper say that a lot.
And I do get that comp, by the way. And I like the comp. I'm saying, like, I don't need him to have a Drew Brees career. I just, like, I like the player. I like what he did in college. I like the circumstances in which he did them. I had some buddies, because, again, I feel I must be the only one on the planet here. They're like, yeah, he's like 13 and 14 in college. Great. And I'm like, Patrick Mahomes was 13 and 19 in college. Like, what is it? I know what it is. I know what it is. People don't like his swag. They don't like that he is confident. They don't like that he is the coach's son, prime son. He's in commercials. Everyone thinks he's too big for his britches. I get all of that. I think all these guys think that of themselves. You ever actually spent time with a player the caliber of being selected in the first round of the NFL? They're all pretty confident. He just wears his on his sleeve and always has. So I'm far less concerned about that stuff and far more concerned on whether he can play within structure and whether he can do some of the physical things an NFL quarterback has to do, because he was never allowed to do them at Colorado. His line was terrible. He was always on the run. He was always running for his life, and he was very successful, by the way, doing it. So I can't believe that Jackson Dart went ahead of him, by the way. Cam Ward, fine. I don't have a take on Cam Ward. But to sit there and need a quarterback and have the ability to get a quarterback for a fifth year and not have to deal with that financial component, and for nobody to have traded up in there, is wild to me. I'm looking at Raiders, Browns, Saints, right? So because the Giants did that. They just picked a different player. But strategically, I can't believe that. And then to see the Steelers pass on him, good luck if you're putting all your eggs in the Aaron Rodgers basket when that gift horse was staring at you in the face. But it better be Aaron Rodgers at this point. I mean, it is criminal if the Steelers roll into next season with their current quarterback situation. No offense, Skylar Thompson, but come on.
Well, I think it tells you that Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers are continuing to have conversations, and they feel fairly confident that it's going to happen. That was at least my takeaway. I think the other thing with Jackson Dart, to me, it actually makes sense for them to go Jackson Dart over Shedeur Sanders, because they already have Russell Wilson, and Brian Daboll said last night, Wilson will be the starter going into this year. Russell Wilson, and you've got Jameis Winston on that roster. If you bring in Shedeur Sanders, you have an immediate quarterback controversy from day one with three guys in that quarterback room, and that becomes the narrative. That becomes the big storyline for the Giants, and they want to avoid that. I get it. I think Jackson Dart, you can put him on the roster. Yeah, they traded back up into the fifth round. That could be the long-term answer for them, because it's not Russ and it's not Jameis, but you avoid an immediate quarterback controversy with Jackson Dart being the guy that they drafted at quarterback. So I fully understand that. I believe wholeheartedly that the Shedeur slide is extremely simple. I think it's extremely simple to explain. I believe that quarterback needy teams, like several of the ones that you mentioned, the Saints, the Browns, the Raiders, it's risky for them to take Shedeur Sanders, because you are locked into him long-term as your future prospects at quarterback. I think a much better landing place for Shedeur would be a team that doesn't immediately need a quarterback, where you can bring him in and you can see how he adjusts to the NFL. You can have him work behind a starter. You can have him, you know, and I know that there's going to be quarterback controversy wherever he goes because he's Shedeur Sanders and all the, you know, all the publicity that follows him and all of that. But I think that I think teams are going to have a better chance to actually see what Shedeur has in the NFL and how he acclimates to an NFL roster and locker room and all of that if they don't have to force him into action right away. So I think it's pretty simple as to why he slid, because I think it's risky for teams that need a quarterback right this second to hitch their wagon to Shedeur Sanders right away.
Look, the Browns pick two times in the next four picks. I think he's going to be a Cleveland Brown. The Raiders pick, I think he'll go in the first five picks here because the Raiders pick five. Basically, if you start it over, the Rounds pick 1-4, the Raiders pick 5. I think he goes to one of those places. And by the way, the Saints are right down there if they wanted to move up. I think he goes very early in this round. There are teams I wonder about to your scenario that you just laid out. What about the Colts potentially? What about the Rams? What about the Cowboys? Maybe the Niners, but I doubt it. Yeah, probably not. Maybe, you know, the Seahawks, maybe the Dolphins would make a little bit of sense. Now to your scenario, you are opening the door to a lot of teams that could be sort of looking at what's next
and looking, right? Looking for value. I mean, you've got Sanders and he's got a pedigree and he's got, you know, upside and all of that. Well, I mean, you're going to get value in the second round for him.
It's not a value proposition. If you have designs on him being your, like, you should have taken him in the first because you can get a fifth year on the rookie contract.
Sure.
That's a big deal.
I get it. But look, I mean, I don't think that any team, you know, that wants him and he's available tonight in the second round is going to be like, man, we really like him, but we didn't take him in the first round and we're not going to get that fifth year option. So we're not going to take him. Like, I don't think that's a deciding factor.
My point is, like, here's what I'm like, if you're let's say the Browns take him with the first pick here, they should have traded up to get him because they would have had a fifth year. You know,
maybe, like, they tried. Maybe they couldn't get something done.
Yeah, which is what happened to the Titans with Will Levis, famously, and maybe so. And that's fine. I mean, if that's the case, that's the case, and they misplayed their hand, and you live with that, you're okay. But yeah, I mean, strategically, to take him early in the second, you're better off taking him late in the first.
And I think, by the way, the Browns, and this is a little bit off the Shedeur topic, I think the Browns had a masterful first round. I think them trading the number two pick and getting the haul that they got and still being able to pick at five, I thought that was incredibly smart for them.
Yeah, because they ended up with the defensive lineman, which they like. Mason Graham is fine. I don't have a hot take on him. I mean, you would like to have Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter. So I think it signals that the Browns are absolutely 100% rebuilding. And in that world, I think that's great because now you're going to get the Jags first next year. You're guaranteeing yourself two firsts next year, very likely two top half firsts next year. Although, and we'll get to Travis Hunter, I do think Travis Hunter is transformative in what he can do. But you also added the pick this year too, which gets you, again, another top 40 pick. So, yes, if their goal is to rebuild, and unfortunately for Browns fans, it should be to rebuild and accumulate a ton of assets. Honestly, Tommy, I think they need to take the Bears' path, which they did, which was try to quickly get a really good team because they have talented players, get a really good team for whatever the next step after Deshaun Watson is. And that may very well be Shedeur Sanders, which would be fine, right? You can take, there are talented receivers they could take right now. There are all kinds of players that they could take to sort of to get ready for the next step after Watson. So in that sense, yes, I think they're good. And on the other side of that biggest trade of the first round, boy, I thought the Jaguars did a very smart thing. They had two very obvious and clear needs, and they get them both
for the price of one
guy.
For the price of one.
So we can't evaluate that trade the same way we evaluate any other trade, right? Like that's what and this is the fascinating. This is why you get the Shohei, you know, conversation, not just because he's a two-way player, but because you have to think of him a different way, like with contract and everything else. If he is good at both, which I think he will be, he fills two needs. So now when you're talking about the Browns and what they just traded, it's the first time since 1977, I think, or maybe the second time is the stat that this has happened, that kind of a trade where a team moves into the top three and doesn't take a quarterback. So it doesn't ever happen. But again, you have to look at this a different way than we've ever looked at any trade because they potentially got two players here. So now it's like, let's say he is a Pro Bowler at one of the positions and a solid starter at the other, whichever, you know, order that happens to be. If you knew you were getting that and you had to give up that extra first, I think you do it because what are you going to take next year? Probably one or the other. If you hit with your pick there, you're probably taking one or the other. The other part about that is for them where they were picking, I mean, I guess they could have taken the top corner in the draft, but they weren't going to get Hunter. So it makes sense to me for the Jaguars. It totally does. I get it. I think it was smart. And yeah, for the Browns, do I think the Browns would have been better off just taking Travis Hunter? I do, but I get it.
They got a lot of value in return, and so I'm on board with that for sure.
The Browns had a chance.
Remember though, the Browns had completely mismanaged their money with the Deshaun Watson contract, and so they needed draft capital to get cheap players to come in because so much money is tied up with Deshaun Watson. So I completely understand that. It was a necessity, you know, based off of their financial situation. With Travis Hunter, don't get me wrong, I think he's phenomenal, and I think that he will make an impact on both sides of the ball. But I think you also have to manage expectations a little bit. They're not going to put him out there 150 snaps a game every single game. Like, I think you look at him, in my opinion, one way or the other. And let's say it's on the offensive side. He's an every down wide receiver, a wide receiver one for the Jags, and that's outstanding. And then if he can be a guy who is a part-time cornerback and make impactful plays and big moments and that sort of thing, I think that becomes the expectation. Not that he's going to be an every down guy on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, he could be your nickel corner. But people that question his stamina, guys, like it's his stamina held true. He played both ways. It's not like he's going to run out of breath all of a sudden now that he's in the NFL. It's really more about can he mentally handle it. I never seen anything with that kid that tells me otherwise. We'll look at the rest of the first round. We'll look at what the Chiefs need to do on day two. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, hops in next. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And we do start off hour number two with our Chiefs insider turned into draft insider today, which we'll have some fun with Felix Johnson on the program with us. We appreciate it, Felix. Listen, round one in the books, the Chiefs get their guy. Let's start with a look at round one, and then we've got you for a couple segments here. We can get into round number two and three tonight. But in round one, the Chiefs, they stand pat. Now, they get a guy that makes a lot of sense. Was he their guy? Where did he sit on the board? We're never going to know the answers to that. But for those of us on the planet, and I don't know who on the planet Earth watched the Chiefs last year and didn't think they needed to get better on the offensive line, they get a guy who profiles to be finally what they've been trying to find for years, and he fell to him. And so I think if you're a Chiefs fan, you ought to be pretty happy today.
Right. No, I don't hate the move, obviously. And then I think moving down to 32 and getting 164 from the Eagles is probably the bigger part of it, to me at least. We've talked about it over the last couple of weeks, but the Chiefs have drafted tackles year after year after year, and none of them have worked. And I think that's what frustrates me a little bit about this pick, only just because it seems like they're making the same mistake. Now, Kingsley Suamataia last year seemed to be a guy that would have profiled to what they were looking for, and going into next season. So it does kind of frustrate me on that front, where it's like you could have gotten better on the weapons front, where they also needed the help there, and they obviously need the help up front offensive line wise, and they made the extension, or excuse me, signed Jalen Thomas, whatever his name is,
Jalen
from
Moore.
San Francisco. There we go, Jalen Moore. I'm sorry. Signed him from San Francisco in free agency this year, and so I thought that was going to at least begin to solve some of the issues. But obviously, Brett Veach, Andy Reid, they decided to make this decision, and it's not the wrong one. I wanted Luther Burden.
Well, you know, Burden is still available. He won't be there the next time the Chiefs pick, but I mean, I guess they could always, you know, trade up and get a weapon at some point if they needed to. I think with Simmons, my big thing is just knowing what he did, even in an injury shortened season last year with Ohio State, and the lack of pressures that he allowed. I mean, we're talking less than 1% of the snaps he allowed a pressure. You know, obviously we know the Chiefs have relied so much on the short and intermediate passes, the dump offs, that sort of thing, just because plays don't have enough time to develop downfield with how bad that offensive line has been. It does seem like, and I know health is a factor, but it does seem like Simmons profiles out as a guy that can at least help in that regard to give Mahomes more time to let the deep play develop.
Absolutely. And if that's, then we've seen some reports over the last 2 years that Patrick Mahomes wants to start letting it loose again, because that's just more fun. And he's obviously a quarterback that wants to have fun on the field on top of winning. So it is, I do understand the front of drafting a tackle. Again, I'm not upset with the pick, and I think that Simmons is going to be a good player. I'm not going to say going to be, just because it's the NFL. You never know what can happen. But it's just kind of interesting to look at. Like, I mean, we're talking about throwing the ball deep downfield. Well, who's a target deep downfield that you really trust? I mean, love Xavier Worthy, but we'll see going into next year. And we'll love Rashee Rice, but he may not be there for the first half of the season, or whatever the case may be. So that kind of frustrated me just from the conversations we've had over the last couple of weeks. But again, obviously you need help at offensive line. Draft your tackle, draft your whatever you needed to. And then seeing like a Walter Nolan, seeing defensive linemen go earlier in the round, you weren't going to get a defensive tackle, a Derek Harmon or any of those guys, because they were taking a couple picks before you.
They have Hollywood Brown too.
Yeah.
I would look at it this way. Like, if I asked you, Felix, in one, you know, sentence to tell me why the Chiefs lost last year's Super Bowl and really why they've lost the two Super Bowls that they've lost, what would you say?
It's because of the offensive line, but I'd even argue, but that's because in the Super Bowls that they've won, they've had one of the best offensive lines in football for sure. And that's because they've went out and signed tackles. They went out and signed Jawan Taylor. They went out and traded for Orlando Brown Jr. They haven't had a tackle that they've started drafted and developed since Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz. Those guys have been gone for a couple years now.
Yeah.
So, and I understand that, like, you need to draft and develop, and hopefully this does work out. And I'm not arguing that it shouldn't or it couldn't, but they haven't had the success, and they've had multiple cracks at it. And I understand that they haven't drafted a first-round tackle, but drafted him with the 32nd overall pick might as well be a second-round pick. Just like
they've just been like Kingsley was a late third, right? Or a late second. Late second. So, like, I think the pedigrees are – they've been trying everything they can to fix the problem without doing the thing that most commonly addresses the problem in the NFL, and that's getting one of these guys early in the draft. Like, the best ones in the league almost all fit. Like, they were all coming in as the best tackles. It doesn't, you know, at tackle, it's hard. And then the other thing I would just ask about, like, to me, and I agree they need to open up the downfield passing game, but to me, like, the chances of better protection for Mahomes will have a higher chance of opening that up than drafting Luther Burden or any wide receiver. They have the guys to do it. They don't have the protection to get a downfield route to save their life. The only thing they can do to throw the ball down the field is to say X, you know, whatever receiver, you know, whether it's Hollywood Brett, is run as fast as you can down the field, and I'm going to throw one up. If they can protect, they can actually run some deep routes again and do real downfield passing.
No, and if that's the big philosophical shift they're going to, then awesome. But the most successful Kansas City Chiefs offensive season we've seen recently was the year that they beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl. They didn't have to go deep down the field. They didn't have to. And in today's NFL, it's going to be harder to go deep down the field. Now you're going to get your chances like they got in the Super Bowl, like certain teams get, just because smart offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators make mistakes, whatever happens. And so you're going to get your opportunities in Kansas City. Hopefully they can open the door there and try and get more opportunities. But I think, again, I'm attached to Luther Burden. And again, the pick has been made. It doesn't matter. I think Luther Burden would have opened up more opportunities for your offense as a receiver, it's Andy Reid. He's probably going to get some snaps at running back or H-back or whatever the case may be. So I think that could have opened up the offense a little bit more than another tackle would have. And I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. Again, if Simmons starts week one and he starts every week, I'm not going to be mad at it. We're going to be sitting here and probably not even talking about him, because when an offensive lineman is good, we don't talk about them. So I think that it's a good pick if it works out, and the injuries, and obviously Brett Veach is a great general manager. Scouting department has done all their studying and everything. So hopefully all of that is taken care of. I just would have liked to see, if we're sitting here in this spot where we know that Kansas City needs this big philosophical shift offensively, or even like we've talked about with George Karloftis with an edge rusher, and obviously we talked about how things didn't work out that way with an interior defensive lineman, I would have liked to seen a move that way. But if it works, I'm happy to.
But you know, if we're talking, you know, moving forward in tonight and then in tomorrow, knowing that from a weapon perspective, I mean, that's a big priority, I think, for them and you as well, Felix. What direction do they go, you know, tonight with their next pick? And then how do you see the rest of the draft board falling for them?
Well, and that's what kind of scares me about the Chiefs, is that I probably won't get excited about any of their picks until tomorrow. Like, I mean, it's Sky Moore. If they drafted a weapon in the second round, that's the person I would think of, is, oh, yeah, Sky Moore, he didn't work out in the second round. And I know it's just – it's PTSD or whatever you want to call it, where it's just, I'm a scorned fan, but that's what it is. And this is recency within the era of success that Kansas City's had. They haven't had the greatest early round picks, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So it is kind of hard to say, like, yeah, go ahead and go grab whatever receiver if Luther Burden's there at pick 63 or whatever. I can't remember the exact pick that they have, but it is just kind of one of those things where it's like, yeah, go get that receiver, but I don't know who you go grab, just because it's one of those draft classes where the top 45-ish picks are similar, and then it's everybody else. So you're probably going to get more value on day three than you would day two.
Yeah, they certainly have the draft capital now with the extra fifth, because they already had they already had five picks, right, in the first four rounds. Now they have six. So they have plenty of capital to go move up in this round. If they identify somebody that way, it's the other reason I like the Simmons pick, is because now they have all that capital. If they've identified somebody else, and maybe they have, maybe they haven't, that they can go up and get whoever it is. I just think it's less likely. Look, there's so many running backs. I do think they'll address running back. Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised if they are overly aggressive at that position. I think you start throwing darts at pass rushers now. This is a good place to get them,
for sure. And I'm seeing your name tag now, Shador's number one fan. I was kind of shocked to see nobody traded back up into the first round and nab him and get that fifth year option. And Kansas City would have been prime in that position to get even more picks in that range that we're talking about here. And I know we'll probably talk about that at some point today, but I think that's going to be a big part of this early part of the draft. So I don't know if Kansas City moves up or is super mobile based off of where Shador goes. I mean, yeah. I'd hate to specialize the conversation just to one player, but that's what it is right now, because fell to the second round.
It totally is. And the Chiefs aren't taking Shador Sanders as much as I've liked that joke over the years.
You never know, dude. You never know. Trade opportunities.
If the Browns take him at two and they didn't do the same thing that the Eagles did with the Chiefs and move up one spot, it'll be a mistake just because of the contractual stuff. But yeah, The Chiefs, you have to imagine they fielded calls there. Or maybe everybody just doesn't like Shadur, which I do not understand. Let's get into day two when we return. We'll start to look at some of the options for the Chiefs. They got a lot of picks here in these next few rounds. I'll tell you why I think that adds into why yesterday was good. We've got Felix Johnson with us, our Chiefs insider. Don't go away. More Sports Daily coming right up.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knix, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knix Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And together, we host the true crime podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crime-ity.
Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. If you want to win some HTO, you can do that right now by texting the keyword T to 20357. That's T-E-A. You can get a free cup of iced tea, more than 26 flavors to choose from, including the return of Blueberry Summerade. These will be good for East or West Wichita or in Derby. Text the keyword T to 20357. Message and data rates apply. You can enter once per day. We welcome you back into another hour of Sports Daily here. We're talking NFL draft. We've got our Chiefs insider, Felix Johnson, with us. We've gone through the pick of Josh Simmons. And I'll tell you another reason I like the pick of Josh Simmons. Tommy, the Chiefs went into this, and the thought was, what is the strategy behind this year? Do they move up and sort of go all in with this roster they've run back from a Super Bowl? Do they get somebody that can help them immediately try to win another Super Bowl? Or do they begin through the draft to build that next chapter because we know they're going to lose so many of these players? Well, with Simmons falling, I think they maybe have accomplished a little bit of both. Simmons could absolutely make this team better if he's healthy this year. He can. He's that kind of a player, has that kind of a pedigree. Now they have all these picks. They can do the same thing here. Now they can go attack some of these positions and think 2 and 3 years down the road, sort of like they did in the McDuffie draft to try and rebuild this. So that's the other reason I like it, Tommy. As much as I wanted to see them move up, I wanted to see them move up to get somebody like Simmons anyway. They didn't have to. They still have all their picks. Now they can just sort of accumulate players to try and offset the blow that they're going to have next offseason. They're going to lose a lot of guys next year.
Well, for sure, and especially on the offensive line. I mean, I think by all accounts, we all pretty much believe that Juwan Taylor is not going to be back after this season. And so right tackle is going to be an issue, right? And so, you know, that's probably not going to be Josh Simmons because you want him to be your left tackle to protect the blind side long term. But if Jalen Moore pans out the way that they think that he will, that could potentially be an option. So, I mean, you're basically having, you know, you got somebody in place here that, with Josh Simmons that, yes, can be an impact player right away if he's healthy. But even then, like, you're looking at a long-term potential cornerstone on that offensive line. They haven't had that in forever. You have to go back all the way to Eric Fisher to think of a guy that that was your anchor on that line like that in that regard. And so, you know, I do think that it does potentially accomplish two things at the same time. And yeah, it's a lot of it's going to pan out how they play their draft picks today, tomorrow, all of that, because they are potentially going to be losing a lot after this season. How do they refill and restock, you know, to be able to go long term? And so I do think it's a smart move in that regard.
Felix, Eric Fisher is an interesting name because if Josh Simmons takes a minute, you'll just have to think back to Eric Fisher for the last time it took a minute for a high pedigree guy at that position to kind of find his groove. But mm-hmm. when we talked last segment about trading up potentially and getting that impact guy, but as much as the Chiefs have made some misses, you know, in the first day and early, they have also made a living being really good in this portion of the draft. Maybe not in the second, you know, the third, the fourth, the fifth, having a lot of picks there. Like, what do you think is more likely, I guess? Do they move up to try and still get a high-impact guy, or do they just start loading up with dudes to slowly bring in and extend this window out as long as they can?
Well, I think what excited me the most, and it was just kind of just the switch of going from 31 to 32, and, like, why'd the Eagles move up? They could have got Jahad Campbell. I don't think the Chiefs are going to draft him at 31. And so, like, it felt like I always feel more comfortable when I feel the Chiefs know something that I don't. And that's what I felt last night, and that's what I kind of felt like with the Legarius Sneed trade a year ago, where, like, oh yeah, they're getting a pick back, but there was that 75% window or whatever the case may be, and it ends up being upgraded to the next round. So I like where the Chiefs are at because I don't know what they're doing. I don't know exactly what the case may be. Now, Tommy, you bring up a good point about the offensive line losing guys off of it, kind of in a negative point with Juwan Taylor and, like, all of the controversy he brings. But in a positive light, Trey Smith's going to be too expensive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do they draft a guard or two? And you know that the Chiefs like to have that sixth guy, whether it be for an injury or just rotating in, like Allegretti and Caliendo kind of played in the last couple years. And they'll have that guy depending on what they do with Simmons and Moore at the tackle spot and Sua Mataia and Caliendo at the guard spot. So I'd imagine that they draft a guy and get him into the system for like a year or two, or maybe somewhere in the next couple of days, an interior offensive lineman. Maybe it's a center to back up Creed Humphrey, because you never know. You want to have a good center to back up your great center. So I do see where the Chiefs, they're kind of strategically moving around. So when I don't know what they're doing, I feel more comfortable. It's a strange place to be in, but it is the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's a good point on drafting interior linemen. Obviously, they feel like Sua Mataia will be successful there. I think they hope Wanya Moores can be successful there. It's interesting with Trey Smith and his long-term propositions. But Tommy, the other spot they're going to need, I think more than any other in the immediate future, is pass rusher. How many more times can they bring back Charles Omenihu? Who knows? But George Karloftis, to me, is the guy that's going to get too expensive for his production and what the Chiefs will be able to afford. So this is a place historically in this league where you can find success, and that is with defensive linemen. This would be a good spot to take. I don't know what they can come out of this draft with at least two of those guys, maybe three, and just see if you can't find a little bit of a diamond in the rough.
Yeah, I know that there were a lot of people out there that were really, really interested in potentially Mike Green being the guy that the Chiefs looked at in the first round, and they ultimately didn't go with him, and he didn't get drafted in the first round at all. You know, then there are several others that are out there that could potentially be, you know, an impact type pass rusher for the Chiefs. And I don't disagree with you. I think that, you know, when you look at who they have on their roster, you know, as an edge rusher right now, obviously George Karloftis has been the guy, but he's going to get paid, and he's probably, I would think, not going to get paid by the Chiefs. Maybe they will, but I think that's, you know, less of a guarantee at this point with the way that, you know, the Chiefs handle their finances. So I think having somebody in place that can add depth at that position this year and then potentially take a step forward if they don't end up re-upping with George Karloftis after this season, I think is a smart way to use a second-round draft pick. And so if there's a guy on the board, and I would doubt it's Mike Green by the time their second-round pick comes around, but if it's somebody like him, or you know, there are other people that are on the board at that point, I wouldn't have an issue at all with the Chiefs using that second-round pick on a pass rusher.
Well, even more to your point, Tommy, we've gone through it before with it, and looking at our field vision metrics, there's a havoc rating that there's about 40-ish defensive ends that fit into about 75 and up. So they're getting you about 7.5 to 8 sacks a year. So this is when you find those guys. There's about 40 guys in the league. Not all of them were first round picks. So can you go find George Karloftis 2.0? Maybe not as good, but can kind of tide you over till you can draft a guy in the 20s eventually, or whatever the case may be. So I do think that an edge rusher is getting drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs either today or early tomorrow.
Let's bring up the elephant in the room too, Tommy. You mentioned Mike Green, off-field issues. CBS Sports and others point out maybe the reason the leader in sacks in college football fell is because of a sexual assault allegation at Virginia, before Marshall, and in high school. The Chiefs, I don't want to say the Chiefs don't care about that stuff, but the Chiefs kind of don't care about that stuff as much because they feel like their locker room culture can keep some of these things in check. So just have that in the back of your mind with that particular player. The Chiefs have a history of taking risks with character guys and trying to get them in and letting guys like Mahomes and Kelsey sort of rehabilitate people. You know, Frank Clark fits that role. Tyreek Hill fits that
mold. There are character issues with Josh Simmons. There are character. I mean, like, the knock on him has been a lack of maturity, you know, and so he's
talking about legal issues.
True,
now.
Right. But to your point, I mean, that's never been something that is an issue. It's just not anything they prioritize.
Yeah. Well, it's not that they're not going to like do it, but they, I think, are more comfortable than a lot of teams when it's like a legal type character issue. They brought back Kareem Hunt, you know, like Rashee Rice has faced it, which there's no way in the world that you didn't have, like, Rashee Rice goes from zero to the thing that he did. Like, there had to be something in the checks that they did. So my point with all that, Felix, is if Green's sitting there staring him in the face, a character issue is not going to be the reason they don't draft him.
Right. I think it's akin to, I mean, we forget it all the time, and I do a lot of reading, and so I remember more about the Patriots dynasty, even though it's kind of recent history. Some people tend to forget, but they had Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown on their roster. So they, and I don't know if they won the Super Bowl in those given years, but they absorbed whatever issues that they had and lasted for however long. And with Antonio Brown, you know, it's Antonio Brown with Josh Gordon that can flame out as quickly as it can. So they have their issues, and you can only last for so long. And I think the Chiefs, they are also the team that cut Kareem Hunt. Like, this is the same, just the same coach and the organization for the most part. So they do have a tolerance level. It's just higher than other teams because they have this recent level of success. They have a quarterback. They have Travis Kelce. They have Chris Jones, guys that not only are great leaders and strong people, it seems like, but are the best in the league. So you have that added on respect of, like, yeah, no, I'm not going to disrespect Travis Kelce because this is the greatest tight end of all time. I'm not going to disrespect Chris Jones because of this, that, and the third. Patrick Mahomes is who he is. So I think that you're right. There could be a cultural thing, but they do have a level of, like, yeah, we won't put up with mess if we don't absolutely have.
No. It's not that they don't. My point is they have a higher threshold for it because it's less of a risk to them than it is to other people. Nobody is coming in and disrupting the culture of the Chiefs that's built on Reed, Mahomes, Kelce, and Chris Jones. That won't happen. It'll either not happen because those guys won't tolerate it, or to your point, the Chiefs will be fine and willing to just cut that loose a little bit. I mean, you know, they do it all the time. All the time they take in guys that way. And most of the time, as much as it annoys fans, some fans, they do find, you know, peace in those character issues. And we'll see what happens with Rashee Rice, and who knows, but like, that's a talented player that's sliding down the board for a reason that the Chiefs are comfortable with, is all I'm saying.
For sure. And I mean, look at last offseason, Rashee Rice, sure, that's the headline issue, but you had offensive linemen getting arrested. You had so many issues going down with your team, and then you still made it to the Super Bowl. You were the last undefeated team. You were still, because of all the things that we've just mentioned. So if they do decide to go with Mike Green, and if he's available and he can still be a productive, again, Brett Veach, they did all the studying on Simmons' injury. I can only imagine that they would do all the studying that they can on character injuries. I mean, watch draft day last week. You can find out that somebody didn't go to somebody's birthday party. You can find out if somebody's a truly good person or not, or if it was just a wrong place, wrong time situation, depending on the scenarios.
Tommy, let's talk running back. The Chiefs, there was the report, I think it was Tuesday, that they were really looking at running back as a position they might be willing to be aggressive for. They're in this point in the draft, though, where, like, I don't even know who's like, who would be that guy now? It there's not really anybody to me that stands out.
Travion Henderson is still around. Quinshon Judkins is still around. I mean,
those guys are graded as, you know, thirds, maybe even down into fourth for it by some, like,
that's fine.
Do you need to reach on one of those guys?
In my opinion, I think it's such a deep running back class that I think you can wait. I don't think you need to reach for one. I don't think you need to trade up for one. I don't think you need to pick one with your second round pick. I'd much prefer them go pass rusher in the second round, or heck, even wide receiver if somebody, you know, is in that position for them at that time in the second round, because it's so deep later on in the draft. I would definitely stand pat on running back and go later in the draft for somebody like that.
Well, I even think that, like, the bigger the name and the later the round, and this might be a little bit of a flawed philosophy, but because there's such a simple translation almost of, if you're good in college, you'll probably be somewhat good immediately in the NFL, no matter what level you played at. Say Travion Henderson's available in the third round, national champion for the Ohio State Buckeyes. That feels right. Feels like he's going to be good in the NFL for at least, he's not be your featured back, but the Chiefs aren't looking for a guy that's going to get 25 carries a game, because that's not what they do.
Well, they're looking for, as much as anything, they're looking for insurance, I think, on Isaiah Pacheco. That can't be. Kareem Hunt was a great story for them last year. Kareem Hunt was not all that effective. I don't think you would have ever, at the start of a season, planned on, our backup plan is a guy who probably is never going to run for more than 5 or 6 yards on any individual carry. Kareem Hunt helped them in pass protection and all the ways he helped them. But they need to get better at that spot. That's a spot they can get better this year that could really impact their Super Bowl chances. Felix, I don't know how much you've looked at Ezeraku. The Chiefs get this luxury. He's an undersized guy, but his college production was high. He's sort of in this range for the Chiefs of maybe trade up candidates. I think the knock on him is strictly size, but he has been a really effective college football player. He fits maybe a profile even more than him specifically or Green specifically. Some of those guys, for whatever reason, that were really good college players, as you mentioned, I do think that's also an opportunity perhaps to trade up and take the risk there. Again, they didn't have to take the risk with Simmons. He fell to them. Mm-hmm. They can afford to take the risk now if they choose to. The risk that I thought they'd take in the first round, they could still take that here.
Well, and the same thing can be said for, like, Simmons with the injury risk. They don't need the corner, but I mean, Will Johnson's still sitting right there. I mean, I know that it's Spags. I mean, he'd be happy with another defensive back. And Will Johnson is a talent that could have went in the first half of the draft and probably should have had this knee injury not popped up. So you're right. I think that the Chiefs, it is philosophically, and I've used that word like 18 times today, but it is one of those things where I wish that they were a little bit more risky, especially at times like this where it's like, it's not even that risky. Like, you're just trading to the top of the first, or top of the second round, or top half of the second round, or third round, or whatever the case may be. So why not? Like, again, we've talked about it over the last couple of weeks. They're there's not a ton of rookies that can make this roster, so you might as well get the best ones available in the spots that you need them to.
And if they trade up and go Will Johnson, for instance, I mean, that's your Trent McDuffie contingency plan, right? Like, that's exactly. If you cannot come to terms long-term with McDuffie.
It gives you more flexibility. Absolutely. Exactly. Like, we talk about the edge rusher, getting an edge rusher just in case Karlaftis is getting paid. Who knows with Trent McDuffie? Knock on wood, it doesn't happen, but it is the NFL. Injuries happen. Hopefully it doesn't happen this year with him. You could see a world where you draft Will Johnson and it's like, oh yeah, he's our next guy. Sorry, Trent McDuffie, kick rocks. But like, that's how it could go. Hopefully it doesn't, but that's a world we could be living in. And there's a player sitting right there that could be your contingency plan.
Yeah, I agree with that. Collect talent. I mean, just a collection of whatever the talent is. That's what they are allowed to do now by
That's what the Eagles do. There's like, all right, we'll draft Georgia.
It's what the Chiefs do too. They've used a lot of this draft capital over the years to trade for guys like Juwan Taylor, to trade for Orlando Brown, to trade for Frank Clark. Like, they've traded a lot of draft capital. There are a couple of drafts where they've just taken a bunch of players and it works out for them because they're good at drafting in this range. And that's where this day today here is the Chiefs get all these picks in these middle rounds. They'll pick twice today today. And then
63 and 66.
And then they get a bunch of picks right after that. Right. Which is their sweet spot. So I think that's part of the beauty of the Simmons deal is they still have the assets and they can still that philosophy. Do they get aggressive with another player or do they just try to load up? And if I'm the rest of the league, the thought of them not having to take a rebuilding year sucks. And if they get this right and get three or four guys out of this draft that can help them after this year, and that's going to suck for the rest of the league, because there's a real chance that after next year, all those guys they brought back, a lot of those guys could very well be gone next year.
Major money on the table for them everywhere. Yeah.
Major money. Felix, we appreciate it. Thanks for the insight. We'll have it all in the books the next time we talk early next week.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome in. Jalen Thompson with us. Quick shout out to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up as we all stayed up late with the NFL draft yesterday. We're going to talk Royals, though, now, as they do finally what they needed to do, quite frankly, in the games against Colorado. They sweep them. And in the last two games, they bucked the trend to 17 straight without scoring more than four runs. They do it in both games. Now they get a big series against the Astros, who are heating up. That starts tonight at the K. Jalen, good series there against Colorado. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're good.
Hanging in there.
We're good. Look, Salvi, let's start with Salvi. Four doubles, 4 for 8. I mean, is the offensive awakening honestly as simple as a guy like Salvi doing what he normally does? Is that enough?
I think it's a big part of it. And also, when we talked to Salvi, I asked him after game one of the doubleheader, and he straight up said, we were doing too much. You know, everybody was trying to be the hero, trying to get the team out of the funk by themselves. So he was like, just keep the line moving. Take what's given and let the next guy, let your teammate come in and do the job if you can't get it done. And I think that's what they've done. I mean, it's the Colorado Rockies, so they're not the best team in baseball right now. So you got to take that in consideration. But I think the Royals are showing signs of life with their offense, and that's a big thing for them moving forward.
I know that obviously yesterday's doubleheader had a lot of positives. You know, they were able to score more than four runs for the first time in like 3 weeks or even longer than that in both of the games. And so that was good that the bats were, you know, sort of unleashed and let loose. The only kind of lingering negative is the status of Cole Reagans after that first game. That game one, had to leave the game after 3 innings. And to be quite honest, in those 3 innings he pitched, he didn't look very good. Gave up 4 runs to the Rockies during that time. What are you hearing about him, his injury status? Where do things stand with Reagans?
We will find out more probably today when I get to the ballpark. But from yesterday, he was getting treatment. It's a left groin tightness it was something that he tried to get loose when he was pitching throughout his start. It kind of got loose in the first and second innings, and then he sat down and it got tight again. He just wasn't comfortable. Matt Cotrero said he wasn't comfortable warming up in his pregame. Salvi said he noticed something in the bullpen and in the first inning. So, you know, the Royals, they are going to continue to monitor him, and hopefully he can, you know, get back to where he needs to be at for their sake, because you don't want to lose a guy like Cole Reagans if he has to go on any type of injury list. So we'll find out more today. But yeah, that is going to be a chief concern, because that is their guy. That's their ace. And you need him if you're trying to make a run this season.
Well, so if he does have to spend any time on the IL and you don't have Alec Marsh back yet, what's that option? Are they going to disrupt the success that Daniel Lynch has found early in this season and try and stretch him out, or do they just go down to AAA and get a spot starter?
That is a very good question, and I think that would be something that you would have to consider, right? I mean, Daniel Lynch has been so good in the bullpen this year. I don't know if they will want to kind of disrupt that, especially because now you're saying, all right, go pitch multiple innings, and that will require him to either stretch out in big league games or stretch out on the side, or I don't think you want to mess with that, because he's an essential part to your bullpen, and you're already down multiple relievers right now without Sam Long and Hunter Harvey. So you're going to need Daniel Lynch to be probably still in his role. So if Cole Reagans was to require an injury list stint, I think you have to go with someone like Noah Cameron down in AAA. He was someone that was fighting for that fifth starter spot in spring training. Maybe you call him up for a spot start and let him make his MLB debut and roll from there.
Going back to the first game in the series with the Rockies, the Royals won that in extra innings. And I thought that was, you know, really interesting, because they grinded it out. It wasn't like the offense, you know, looked anywhere close to what it did in the doubleheader yesterday. But I think what was most notable in that opening game, Carlos Estevez struggled really the most we've seen him struggle this year out of the pen. Gave the lead back to the Rockies in the ninth, and then ultimately, you know, the Royals were fortunate enough to get the win in extras. Did you see anything in that appearance from Estevez that concerned you long term, or do you think that was just kind of more of an anomaly because he has been really good throughout the course of this season so far?
I think it was an anomaly because he came back and he was able to get the save later on in the series. So I think game one, he got that save. So I'm not too worried about him in the walks. It just happens, you know, relievers, they're always going to have one or two or three games during the season where they just look flat out just not who they're supposed to be. But it was a little concerning to see that game go quickly as it could, and then the bullpen come in and just start walking guys. But, you know, that will happen over a course of 162, but Carlos Estevez, he has six saves this season, and he's been pretty good. So I think that he just has to continue on his same path, and, you know, he'll continue to get adjusted pitching in Kauffman Stadium. Remember, this is his first year doing that, so I think he'll be where he needs to be when it's all said and done.
He pitched for Colorado for a long time, maybe some emotion there. Certainly good to see that clean inning yesterday. Let's all pat ourselves on the back here. We've made it. Oh, I don't know, 10 minutes into this thing, we brought up Jack Caglione playing in the outfield. Let's do that now. Jalen, Jack Caglione played in the outfield. Played fine. Had one good, you know, play that was shared around on social media. To me, that screams fast track.
Yeah.
How do you read that?
To me, that tells me that, all right, you're Jack Caglione. We are heading into May, and you are leading AA in all these different categories. Let's see if you can play the outfield, and then that's the next progression for you. You can do that at AA, then AAA might be in your future coming in probably June, July. I think that's where I kind of read that at, where you put him at AAA in June and July, and then if he does well there, you start to think about, is this going to be a September call-up?
Really?
That's what I think.
I think if he plays the outfield, now assuming he still hits, I think if he proves he can play the outfield, they're getting him up in no later than June, and Hunter Renfroe is going to get DFA'd. That's what I think. But, you know, maybe if Salvi keeps hitting and Vinny comes around, maybe they don't need to do that. But I think there's a real possibility they need Caglione this year, and they're going to have to let him just take his lumps a little bit, hitting seventh for the Royals at the big league club.
Yeah, let me ask you this question, too. With the A's bringing up Nick Kurtz, who was also in the same draft class, yep, number 4 overall, do you think that might have added something to it?
They got to just clear the contractual stuff, but maybe. I mean, I think it's a need-based thing. I don't think they want to, but I think they know they might need him. And the question to me becomes, can you really wait that long in that division to call him up if you think he's going to help you? Because I don't know that they can.
Yeah, that is the other side of the coin. I think theoretically, like, The scenario I said, I think that's probably what they really want to do. But like what you said, Jacob, you're absolutely right. If he keeps hitting the way he's hitting, and it doesn't help either that so many different media outlets continue to post every single thing he does in Double A. So that just keeps reminding the Royals, hey, you got this guy in Double A.
He's there. Get him ready. There. Yeah.
That's right. You guys need a power hitter?
Oh, interesting. Where
but I agree with you, Jacob. I think that could really happen, what you said, too. I think it could if they run take that big swing.
Has Drew Waters done enough at this point to be your everyday left fielder?
I think that you should give him a chance to,
yeah,
because he has just been so comfortable. I mean, I understand that you send MJ Melendez down and you want him to get his swing worked out and things like that. But in the big leagues, if opportunity opens up, you have to be ready to seize the moment. And I think Drew Waters has done that. Just keep giving them playing time, and maybe he finally becomes that top prospect that he was with the Atlanta Braves, that top prospect that you traded for. He made some great plays. He had that nice catch against the wall in left field in foul territory. He has a couple of nice hits. He hit the home run. I think he's starting to put it together, but you just don't know until you give him consistent at-bats. So I think you should go with that if I'm the Royals and see what he can do.
Boy, comfortable is, I think, maybe the perfect adjective for what Drew Waters looks like. He looks very comfortable right now, far more than some of his peers, I think. And that's good. And honestly, so like, let's say Cags comes up and he's playing right field. You've got Waters playing left. I think you want to put Mikel Garcia in center. The question then becomes, what do you do with Massey/India? India better start hitting.
Yeah, but I think they like Kyle Isbell in center. I think they want to keep him in center because of what he can do.
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah.
He's not a better option than Mikel Garcia becoming a pretty good center fielder.
But they also like Mikel at third base, too. So it just, because Mikel's like their best defender. So what I think, if in your scenario, Jacob, what I think could happen, if all that plays out, then you would probably see Mikel kind of be in that role of a Ben Zobrist, maybe, where he can play third, he can play center, he can play second. You keep him in the lineup, but he's at different positions. So then he's just like giving guys days off. So one day he's in center field, one day he's in third base, give Indy a day off, give Massey a day off at second. You know, they can do something like that. So there's a way to do it, and they also have the designated hitter, too. So I think if the Royals get to that point, you know it's because they want to push for this division, and they need to.
I love it. Astros series coming up this weekend. Should be a big one. The Astros are heating up, unfortunately, right at the wrong time. You face two of their really good pitchers, and this is a good test. I mean, look, I think this is a nice little litmus test coming out as the Royals heat up to see if it's real or not. They're at home. It's a team they ought to be able to beat. The Astros they're heating up, but they're not the Astros of a year or two ago. So we're excited about this series. Tonight, it is Lugo and Wisniewski. He's not one of the guys I was talking about. I haven't heard of him before. Then it's Framber and Hunter Brown, who are both pretty dang good.
Yeah.
So it should be a fun series.
I'm excited for that Hunter Brown, Chris Bubich matchup. I think that's going to be really nice. Two young pitchers. I know Chris Bubich has been around, but I think he is the MVP so far for the Royals. I would give it to Michael Garcia on the offensive side, but Chris Bubich has just been great this year.
There's a few. I think Daniel Lynch and Bobby Witt Jr. have come, but I'm with you on that. Bubich has been fantastic. And we'll call it the best development of this season. How about that?
Yeah.
Brady Singer's looking good. So it's been nice to see Bubich pick up that slack. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I was going to say this too. When you look back at that trade for Brady Singer for Jonathan India, it was kind of important that you had to have Chris Bubich pitch well, because you gave up a nice starter. We talked about that this offseason. So I think Bubich was the answer to why it was okay to give up Brady Singer.
Yeah, Brady Singer is sitting right now with just a bunch of good starts, and he's been solid for sure. And a lot of those have come in the band box in Cincinnati. But India's got time. Look, India, I'm still confident in India. We'll see.
He had a walk and he had a double yesterday in game two. He's a hitter. So a hitter's going to go through cold spells, but I think he's going to turn around. And like I said, he's getting better in left field. It's just a matter of you want him to be your leadoff hitter. So if he does the leadoff part right, you'll figure out the rest of the stuff.
I totally agree. You need him on base for Bobby Witt Jr. Jalen Thompson, beat writer for the KC Star for the Kansas City Royals, our Royals insider. You can follow him on X at Jalen Thompson and find his work at the KC Star. Jalen, we appreciate it. Good to be talking about some wins this week.
Thank you guys so much. And I want to plug something before I go. I have a story on Freddie for Me coming out on Sunday. It's really great.
I'm ready for it because I love me some Freddie for Me. Man, what a fun show on Sports Daily, Tommy. The day after round one of the draft is just so fun. I love it so much. And Monday will be the same because we got a lot of picks to analyze. All right, we'll see everybody Monday. We'll have Royals reaction. Thanks to Felix Johnson. Thanks to Jalen Thompson. For Max, for Tommy, I'm Jacob. See you Monday.